This is That's Why It's Hotter, written by Cartoon Mayor and Coastal Service, and recorded by Tipsy Kitty. Part 3 of the Wet-Ass Squissyverse. Chapter 1. Ed is fishing off the pier when the head pops up. He almost screams. An unfamiliar presence in his head blasts out a very clear, "No threat, no harm." Ed lets his fish knife slide back to the dock beside him, but he keeps it close, well within reach. "What the fuck?" he thinks, because he spends so much time with only Steed that his first instinct is apparently to talk psychically. "What the fuck? What the fuck?" he tries again, out loud this time. The presence, which feels Scylla, not that Ed can guess what else it could be, flashes some images to Ed of what has to be Steed. He looks younger, but it's the same floating blonde hair, the same gorgeous teal tentacles. Ed wiggles around the bond that's rapidly thickening between him and the stranger. He knows instinctually he's better at it now than he would have been before he became part Scylla, before the shift. "Steed? Steed Bonnet? Lives on a house?" says the stranger in Ed's mind. "In a house," Ed corrects absently, then startles again. "Wait, you're looking for Steed?" His fingers inch towards the knife again, and he reaches out with his mind and tugs the bond that links him to his mate, opening it up. He can feel Steed, groggy, grumbling at the other end. Steed's been out of sorts lately, itchy in the bond, touchy, clingy, and fretful. Ed's not sure what to do about it, but he feels like it's starting to seep into him, too. He's still the happiest he's ever been, still fucking thrilled with his lot in life as it stands, but there's something... he doesn't know what. Steed's taking a nap about it this afternoon, floating 20 feet down on the bottom of the bay, letting the weight of the water press him on all sides to see if he can stop the restlessness under his skin. Jim had asked if it was mites. Steed had not appreciated the suggestion. "Right! Humans live inside houses! Inside the walls!" The stranger seems to be taking mental notes. Ed feels himself starting to relax. This guy really doesn't seem like a threat. Steed tugs back at the bond, a little more awake now. "What is it, darling?" he asks. Ed can feel him stretch his tentacles and his arms, can sense the relief he gets from it. Warm sweetness flows down their connection, and it's returned. Ed can't tell who sent it first, but it makes the corners of his lips twitch up the slightest bit, makes his eyelashes flutter. Sea lords and human gods, he loves this fucking guy.
"Scylla here, looking for you."
He sends a picture of the guy along with an impression of his mental voice.
"What do you want me to do?"
Steed's presence is suddenly a lot more awake. "Scylla, here, help!" He cuts himself off quickly, and Ed's thighs twitch as Steed bunches his tentacles to shoot upwards, all groggy sweetness gone. "I'm coming, Ed, I'm coming. Don't let them near you." His mental voice is frantic, hard, not like Ed's ever heard before. Ed sees him a second later as he bursts from the ocean in front of the stranger. He's sleek in the water, rising up nearly to the waist, dripping water from his hair, down his broad, muscled back, the skin shading light blue at his waist. He fans his tentacles out around him, keeping the waterline at his hips, and he looms down over the stranger.
"It's... fuck. It's really fucking hot."
Ed's not used to Steed being intimidating. Steed is... he's Steed. He loves Animorphs books and only the light green seaweed in the seaweed salad from Tanaka. He collects marbles and refuses to believe cream cheese comes from an animal. But he's also... Ed knew Steed was strong, of course he did. But it's just a different view of his mate and husband than he's used to, all right? It's
fucking hot.
"Steed," says the stranger. "It's me, Jeffrey." Steed pauses, sinking a little in the water. Ed can feel his confusion. "Jeffrey Fettering, from the Kelp Patch?" In Steed's mind, Ed can see a group of, oh shit, tiny Scylla, their little baby arms waving with their tiny nubbly tentacles. The name rings the slightest echo of familiarity with Steed. "Jeffrey?" says Steed, and sinks down in the water, pulling his tentacles back in from their tense display.
"What are you doing here?"
"Why does he have a human name?" Ed asks along his private connection with Steed.
A human name, replies Steed. Jeffrey's one of the oldest Scylla names, older than Steed. Humans got it from us. He sends an image of a sleeping human, sends the sensation of a free-floating net of psychic power, a sort of miasma, washing over them as they dream. We used to be much closer, your species and mine. Steed runs gentle mental fingers down Ed's cheek. Not as close as you and I, though. The whole exchange takes a fraction of a second. Jeffrey's barely through his preamble, and Ed tunes back in. I thought you might not have heard the news.
News? Asks Steed.
You're all the way out here, and I respect that. I think it's very cool and brave. But I thought maybe you would be a little out of the loop, and I was headed this way anyway, and...
Buddy, Ed interrupts. Tell us what you're here to say.
Jeffrey blinks, looks at Steed. You have quite a bond with your human mate. I can feel it.
Jeffrey, says Steed,
and Ed can feel the note of impatience in his mental tone.
What news?
Oh, right. Well, there's a... He says something, but it's not a word. Or at least, Ed's brain can't quite latch onto it the way he can to most Scylla language. The concept slithers through Ed's mind, which does its best to translate something untranslatable into human words. Wet, layered, rushing magic. Cascade, Ed's mind finally spits out.
What's cascade? Asks Ed.
Steed shakes his head, sending a quick later his way. And Ed tries not to be annoyed. He hates being out of the loop.
You're one of the called? Steed asks.
But Jeffrey is sending a baffled wave of amusement their way before Steed finishes sending the thought.
Oh, Sea Lords, no, he says.
No, I'm not mated, not yet. Lucius and Pete have been called. It's a big one, they say. Maybe the biggest ever. Steed's mind prickles at the names, flashes a picture of a pair of Scylla at Ed, one bald with long brownish red tentacles, the other pale and dark-haired, with peachy pink tentacles fading into red at the tips. They're not friends of Steed's, not really, but he doesn't have the flash of anxiety he usually has when thinking of the Scylla he knows from his past. They've gone ahead to begin the preparations. It's Jeffrey sends what must be the equivalent of GPS coordinates for Scylla. A whirl of information. Currents and temperatures and star maps through deep, dark water. Ed can't quite figure it out, and the effort makes him a little nauseated until Steed tugs his mind, pulls him into alignment, and overlays the constellations and rushing tides onto a map of the Pacific. It's a spot off the coast of Colombia. 1,000 miles west, deep below the waves. It's far from home. Maybe 2,000 miles total. But it's a distance they've traversed before.
Oh, no, says Steed. We aren't going there. We're not? Then why?
Jeff is just telling us the news, says Steed. Only certain Scylla are called to the Cascade, and only one pair from each shoal in the brine. There's a note of something in Steed's presence, in his words. A cousin of longing, something akin to fascination, reverence. Steed wants this. Steed wants to be called, has wanted this for years, his whole life, maybe. There's a yearning for it that Ed feels echoing through his bones, in his own heart. The part of him that will always be Scylla is drawn to the concept, to the place, like an inescapable current, a rolling tide.
You'll tell me about it? Ed asks.
He sets the rod aside, pushes his knife further up the dock, slides into the water and lets Steed's tentacles draw him in.
After he goes, you'll tell me everything?
Steed's reply is immediate, a balm against Ed's raw nerves as his tentacles curl around his waist and twist around his thighs. Of course, my love. I'll tell you everything I know. Jeffrey looks at Ed curiously, then up at Steed. I'd heard the rumors, he says, but I wasn't sure I could believe them. Ed feels Steed's hackles rise.
Rumors?
That you and your human had completed the shift, Jeffrey explains. That you're really bonded. That he's part of you and you're part of him and you're both in the Sea Lord's grace.
Is that a problem?
Steed asks. His tentacles constrict against Ed, his suckers flaring, pulling at Ed's skin, releasing again.
No. The denial is immediate.
No, I'm really impressed, man. Steed's tentacles go still, tied on Ed's body. What? You wanted to meet the humans, and you did. You said to hell with convention, and you made it one. And figured out how to make it work. Besides, with the troubles lately, it's good to see a shift that's worked so well. Especially one that nobody thought was possible. It gives the rest of us weirdos hope, if you don't mind me saying so. Ed can feel that Steve does kind of mind being called a weirdo and lumped in with this guy, who even Ed can tell is kind of an odd duck for Acilla. But he's uncharacteristically tactful as he replies with a vaguely positive feeling. Could I invite you for a meal? He asks. Both of you? My shoal isn't more than 2 days' journey from here, even for your human. Steed's already sending a very polite negative, and Jeffrey's face falls. Thank you for the news, Jeffrey, and it was lovely to see you again. But we have important human work that we can't leave. Jeffrey nods, crestfallen. No, hey, important human work, of course. I guess I'll maybe see you around then? Will you be coming to the churn? Maybe, says Steed, which Ed knows is an absolutely the fuck not. After a few more pleasantries, Jeffrey finally disappears under the waves. Steed doesn't let Ed go until he's out of sight, even for Steed's sharp eyes, far from their little bay. Important human work, huh? Says Ed, grinning. What work is that? Research, Ed, says Steed. Human anatomy. You're full of shit, Ed says. But he knows Steed can feel the deep well of amused affection under the words. He lets Steed draw him close, kisses him under the Caribbean afternoon sun, and buries his fingers in Steed's curls. Steed tugs him below the waves. Ed feels his body make the strange switch from air to water, feels the way the dissolved gases seep through his skin into his blood without his lungs as an intermediary. It was fucking weird the first few times he did this after completing the shift, but now it's nearly second nature. There's no moment of panic as he allows the water to fill his nose and Steed to cover his mouth with his own as they sink into the warm sea. He focuses on soothing the lingering anxiety Steed feels at being confronted with one of his own kind. Jeffrey had clearly posed no threat, but Steed is still buzzing along their bond about the potential danger if Ed were to engage with other Scylla. There's really no question when it comes to Scylla versus human in the long run. One species has psychic powers and loads of tentacles and amphibious advantages. The other has dicks. The whole breathing underwater thing has taught him a new trick. Ed can stuff his mouth with Steed's tentacles all he wants without ever needing to stop for breath. As Steed calms down, Ed brushes gentle fingers against his suckers, delighting as he always does at the way they suck and release his skin in a pulsing rhythm at the contact. Ed pulls one tentacle to his face and nuzzles into it, giggling out bubbles when one of the suckers gives him a deliberate little kiss on the cheek. He'll have a small mark there, but he loves it when Steed marks him. Ed finds that same sucker and rubs the tip of his tongue around it. The texture took some getting used to at first, the sharp but flexible little teeth, but now it just makes Ed feel good. And he always feels good when he's making Steed feel good. He loves the way they swirl together in their bond, sending pleasure back and forth, melding together. Steed shudders and draws Ed closer. Ed threads the tentacle through his hands, winds it between his fingers, kissing and licking the suckers as he does. He finally reaches the tip and swirls his tongue in a circle around it. Steed presents another tentacle, and Ed repeats the process again and again, so many times that he loses count of all the tentacles he's teased. Steed is completely relaxed now, focused on Ed's mouth, the amative bond opening up between them. Steed snakes a few tentacles around to brush against Ed's ass and dick, and Ed appreciates it. But right now, he really, really wants to fuck Steed thoroughly with his mouth. Wants to get his mouth thoroughly fucked and filthy by Steed's slick tentacles. Oral is one of the only things he misses about human sex. There's something about cum in his mouth, hot and thick, salty and heady, that just isn't the same with tentacles. It was really fun to blow Steed during the shift, but it was his dick, and it wasn't his own mouth, so not quite what he was looking for. Anyway, it's no big deal. Just like everything else he gave up to be with Steed, it barely registers. He just thinks about it sometimes. Steed worms the tentacle into Ed's mouth, shutting up his thoughts. Steed is a little disgruntled, guilty turned on about it, and Ed sends a pulse of reassurance along their bond that he loves this. He loves it so much. And Steed isn't inadequate in the slightest. You can't get everything you want with one partner, human or Scylla. And Scylla can do so, so much more than a human in almost every other respect. Like overlaying their pleasure onto your mind as you're literally giving it to them. Jesus fuck. Ed loves his mate so fucking much. The tingling suction of his own mouth is psychically wriggling through his own dick. And also, somehow, his limbs. Because a tentacle isn't a dick, and it isn't a leg. It's a semi-sentient fuck machine. The bond shakes with Steed's amusement at that thought. A little reductive, my darling, don't you think? Ed sucks hard in response. At first, Steed likes to just pulse inside Ed's mouth, but then his tentacles start to rock from side to side, and he probes a little deeper. And when he's really getting into it, the tentacle swivels around and around, back and forth, the sucker scraping deliciously against Ed's tongue and palate and the insides of his cheeks. Steed likes to get himself good and riled, and then pull out and stick another tentacle in to start the whole thing over, the little hedonist. The previously sucked tentacles rub together once Ed is done with them, keeping the rolling tide of his pleasure creeping forward, wave by wave, riding up the shore. It's a sensation Ed can't even translate into his human body, except from his memories of being in Steed's. It's like edging, and like humping a pillow, and like a vibrator on a low setting, if you had multiple dicks that didn't come and they could just kind of fuck each other. Steed is getting closer and closer, spinning and replacing tentacles in Ed's mouth so fast that Ed just relaxes his body completely and lets Steed support and use him, lips and tongue slick and swollen. Steed begins to move so quickly that one tentacle isn't fully withdrawn before the next one goes in, and motherfuck. Ed grabs both tentacles, jaw stretching deliciously, and screams along their bond for Steed to keep them both exactly where they are. Steed almost comes to that thought on his own, but Ed clamps down on their amative bond because he isn't ready yet. Two tentacles in his mouth, pulsing, shuddering, fuck. He thinks about Steed taking turns with each tentacle fucking into his throat, and a nanosecond later, Steed does just that. So now Steed is stuffing Ed's mouth, rubbing his own tentacles together in Ed's throat in the process. And Steed's not the only one who's about to come from this alone. Steed reaches down and squeezes the tentacle around the base of Ed's dick so that he can't come either. Turnabout is fair play. I shouldn't have told you about that proverb. Ed, I want... Yeah, fuck, yeah. Steed slides a third tentacle into Ed's mouth. His cheeks are stretched and his jaw is aching and his throat is swollen. Steed is inside him, too, undulating against his prostate with a thin, twisting tentacle. He didn't even register when that happened, and he feels stuffed and full and so, so perfect. Steed's tentacles are everywhere, touching Ed, touching himself. He even slips a few along his own hole, skating through the tangle of tendrils and dipping in. Which still feels taboo to Steed, despite, maybe because of, how much it drives them both wild. Ed comes, pleasure blasting through him, but he doesn't stop sucking. He might come again. He might never have actually stopped coming. And Steed spills his ink into the water, whirling warm and dark and tangy all around their bodies. Steed withdraws his tentacles, and Ed kicks to the surface to breathe real air. Steed is nestled inside Ed's mind and body with him, enjoying the way his chest and belly expand. Ed may be able to live underwater now, but he still loves using his lungs, and Steed is always thrilled to feel a little bit human. Steed joins him above the surface, and they tangle together physically as well as mentally. That was nice, Steed says.
Just nice?
Very nice. I think I can take four next time. The tips of Steed's tentacles give a little snap and wriggle of arousal. Neither of them are ready to go again yet, but the night is young. End of chapter 1.
Chapter 2. That night, Ed dreams. He's under the water. There's no light, but it's not pitch dark. It's bright aqua, like the color of a cartoon ocean. He drifts for a bit until he bumps into the seabed. There are sea urchins keeping him company here. Hundreds of them. Thousands, maybe. They're all wearing hats made of smaller fish who are wearing hats made of plankton. It's a party, Ed understands. He's crashing a sea urchin party. Sea lords know Ed can't dismiss this as just a dream. His husband is a mythical sea creature with psychic magical powers, for fuck's sake. But he's pretty sure this one is based on something he saw on TikTok. Or will, when he wakes up. For now, he's just dancing with the sea urchin friends to what his dream brain knows is called bubble music. The dream changes. He's deeper under the ocean now. The water is navy blue. A tentacle sprouts from his hip, and then another. And then a Scylla's Worth explodes out of his body. It's weird because he's in a Scylla body, but he still has his legs and penis. And then all around him he hears pop 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 in quick succession. And his legs are tentacles, and his tentacles are legs. And his penis is a Scylla hole, but he still has his balls somehow, which is really the weirdest thing. This one isn't as fun as the sea urchin party, but he has had it a fair amount of time since the shift, so at least he's just disgruntled and not scared. The dream changes again. Now everything is pitch black. He waves a hand in front of his face. Nothing. He shouts. Even the bubbles are silent. He's treading water, and he knows that it's water because it's a dream. But it also doesn't feel like anything at all. He thinks he's back in his human body, but he can't even be sure of that. The back of his neck prickles. He spins around, but he can't see anything. His body is getting tired. He casts out a mental net, looking for Steed. But instead, he feels something... something... he doesn't even know what. Enormous? Earth-shaking? Eldritch? It's not human, and it's not Scylla, and it doesn't feel like any sea creature Ed has ever encountered. He feels the thing coming closer. The water gets hotter. The darkness gets darker. Something glitters. It's the size of a dinner plate, a lustrous black. It flashes past Ed on one side, and a current follows behind it, spinning Ed around, making him dizzy. And then, finally, something he can really see. A huge, jagged circle, 15 feet in diameter, pale and ghostly gray under the water. It's getting closer and closer, and too late Ed realizes it's teeth. And the glittering black circle was an eye, and he is fully about to get swallowed. He blubbers, and now he can hear it. He can hear his limbs thrashing in the water and against the sand rubbing together on the seabed, and some long, low squalling that's muffled and sounds like it's coming from hundreds of miles away. And he can hear the heartbeat of the thing that's about to swallow him. Ba-bum, ba-bum, ba-bum. Or is it his own pulse, slowed almost to nothing? Is it both? He squeezes his eyes shut, but he can still see the mouth, and then he's inside it, and everything goes black again. Ed! Ed, wake up! Steed yanks Ed awake through their bond. He thrashes on the mattress with panic because he didn't want to wake up. He wanted to be swallowed. Or maybe not wanted to. He just felt like it was right somehow. Like it's exactly what should happen, and what has always happened, and what will happen again in his next life. He's kind of a little horny about it, too, but he's going to ignore that for now. I'm all right, Steed. I'm okay. Steed tugs Ed off of the mattress and into the water. He wraps Ed around in his tentacles and jets through the cat flap out into the open ocean. He sinks them below the waves and presses his face into Ed's neck. Ed can feel Steed's fear, and something that feels like anticipation, and also maybe a trace of horniness. I can't believe it, Steed says. I can't believe it, I never thought...
Never thought what?
Steed grabs for his thoughts before they can transfer to Ed, and Ed claps back with an emphatic chastisement. Steed grumbles in his mindscape, but lets Ed in.
It's a sign? Ed asks. The dream is a sign?
I don't know about sea urchins wearing hats or your weird lug tentacles.
Hey.
But yes, the last part.
A sign for what? A sign for what, Steed?
Steed huffs and dribbles out a piece of information that slithers around Ed's brain before it fully takes root. Ceremony. Community. Culture. The cycle of life. The stewardship of the Scylla.
The Cascade, Ed says.
Yes.
What does it mean?
Nothing, Steed says petulantly. Even as his thoughts communicate to Ed, it means he's been called.
That doesn't seem like nothing.
It's nothing because we're not going to do anything about it.
Why?
Because I have to keep you safe. And that's not a lie. Steed is frantic with fear at the thought of Ed being exposed to other Scylla, to their secrets and rituals. He'd proven it with Jeffrey yesterday, and he's frothing with it now. It's why he rushed Ed out of the house and into the open water. He feels safer here, like he can protect Ed better. But there's something else beneath Steed's anxiety. Something that feels like jealousy.
Talk to me, love.
Why you? Why a human? Steed's voice in Ed's mind gets very small.
Why not me?
Ed frowns. He doesn't know how to comfort Steed through this one. He wraps his body and his mind around Steed and gives him a squeeze through both. He peels off a small part of his attention from soothing his mate and reaches back to yesterday, playing through everything Jeffrey had said. Steed catches on and overlays his own memories. It's funny where they diverge. Jeffrey looks a lot bigger and more menacing in Steed's mind, for example. But finally Ed finds something he can work with. He highlights the memory snippet for Steed.
Steed says. Think about it. You've been bitchy for weeks. So have I. Something's up. And if it's always made it pairs who are called, then that means...
The call is for me, too.
Yep.
Something soothes in Steed. Something that had been held tense and tangled, close to his center. He propels them upward with the lazy push of his tentacles. He holds Ed as they float parallel to the surface of the water. Faces just peeking out above the waterline. The stars are out, and the moon is bright. And even though the night air is cool... Ed feels at peace, in a way that feels a little supernatural, honestly. Like something's finally clicked and his brain isn't fighting it anymore. He's been called. They've both been called. Steed doesn't feel the same way, although he's trying to. He's not convinced he's actually supposed to be involved with any of this.
Tell me more about the Cascade,
Ed says. Steed hesitates for a moment. And then tugs Ed into a memory. He's younger, much younger. An adolescent at most. But Scylla don't age like humans do. So Ed gets the vibe but can't translate it. Other Scylla of Steed's age are floating together in what feels like school, camping, church, field trip. Watching a much older Crib-D speak about the Cascade. Only it's not speech. It's pure psychic projection. A net of energy bundled around the young Scylla, pulsing with the story. Steed can feel and see his actual form in the water, but another setting is overlaid semi-opaquely around him. It's dark, although Steed can still see marine snow drifting softly downward. It's like a 3D movie. If a 3D movie included a full sensory experience, complete with emotions. The Crib-Dees is nudging the students with a feeling of anticipation, reverence, dread. Steed is utterly entranced, ignoring some of the disrespectful snickering that twitters through some of his classmates' various bonds. The story is this. Deep, deep below the surface, deeper than the reefs, deeper than sunlight, there is death. The marine snow shifts its slow drift downward and begins to move at an angle. The focus of the story follows, revealing a large glowing gray mass of something, but the story won't let the young Scylla know exactly what it is. Scylla materialize in the water around the mass, but only as flat outlines of dark blue, like shadow puppets. They sway in the water in a weird little cartoony puppet dance. They link hands and form one long chain that circles around the mass, and moves first one way, then the other, getting a little faster each time they switch direction. The Charybdis pushes the feeling of inviolable sanctity through the projection to the Scylla youth, and Steed believes it with every single one of his hearts. Where there is death, there is life. The blurry gray mass sharpens as the story pushes in. Its bones, thousands of bones, human and Scylla and fish and whale and other creatures that has no name for, and Steed can't stop to explain right now. They're stacked on top of each other in a humongous pile along the seabed. A sound rings out in the water through the story. It's a whine, and then a wail, and then it cuts off and is gone, although Steed can still hear a phantom ringing in his ears. Through the layers of the story and Steed's memory and Steed's mind, back in his own body, Ed's nose begins to bleed. The puppet Scylla are spinning around the bones like a zoetrope, their limbs blurring into different positions and not moving individually. As raw metaphysical energy builds inside the circle, the pressure on Steed's senses is almost overwhelming. It rushes away and towards the bones which scatter in the water in all directions, before they're sucked back together and zipped into a humongous oblong shape. Something that, once again, the story won't let Steed fully understand. That something turns toward Steed. The circle of puppet Scylla breaks, allowing it through. It opens its jaws wide and swallows him whole. Steed gasps as the story fades.
"That's how you know," the Charybdis says. "If you're swallowed, you've been called."
"What was that?" Ed says as the memory fades. "I don't know, but it's old and important." "Ed, you're bleeding."
"Fine, I'm fine."
And Ed is fine. He is more than fine. He's shaking a little from the comedown of the story, from the intensity of Steed's awe and veneration, but he feels invigorated. And fucking horny, fuck. Shit.
"So, when are we leaving?" Ed says.
"We are not leaving. This isn't a research opportunity. It's dangerous." He reaches out and runs his finger gently, so gently, over Ed's top lip, wiping away the drop of blood that's trickled over his philtrum. His touch is soft, just like how he's cradling Ed in his limbs, as though he's something precious that needs protecting. But Ed doesn't want to be protected. Not from this. He leans into the touch, but he presses on their bond, demanding Steed continue. Steed heaves a mental sigh and drags Ed back into the memory.
"The Scylla have very few natural predators,"
the Charybdis is saying.
"We are powerful, not just in our bodies, but our minds. A long, long time ago, when we still ate other travelers."
Ed's mind translates travelers to fish and crustaceans, etc. Things with nervous systems, basically.
"Scylla fought each other for control over hunting grounds. We warred with each other almost to extinction."
Flashes of horrible conflict. Scylla fighting Scylla, tearing each other apart. The waters running blue with their blood. "Do you see?" Steed says. "I know I'm weak and pathetic. I can't protect you." Ed seethes with anger at whoever made Steed feel that way. He shoves his memories of Steed's grace and strength along their bond, which does make Steed feel better. "But my people are enormously powerful," Steed continues. "Who knows what they'd do to a human, let alone a human who's made it to a Scylla and broken all the rules."
"What would happen next?"
"What?"
"Scylla went to war, used to eat fish, etc. What next?"
"The Sea Lords told us we couldn't eat travelers anymore, restored our population, and gave us stewardship over the seas."
And the cascade is what?
A ceremony to restore. The concept seeps through Ed's perception and translates to something like balance, hierarchy, rhythm.
That seems pretty fucking important. We should probably go.
No! Steed's response is instant and forceful. But Ed's still worked up from the dream, still buzzing. The itchy, restless feeling from earlier has transmuted into lust, into a burning need under his skin for Steed, for closeness, for the building heat between them. He'll convince Steed. Steed knows they have to go. Ed knows he knows. He's just being stubborn. And for now, he sets that aside. Ed flips himself around and grips Steed's shoulders and dunks him under the water. Steed is too stunned to resist, and he scrunches his face at Ed as he dips beneath the surface and grins.
"Steed, sweetheart," Ed says. "You're going to break eventually, so..."
He grinds himself against the sensitive space where Steed's skin turns into tentacles.
"Let's find a better way to occupy our time than arguing, okay?"
Steed gives a mental "hmph," but is already winding himself around Ed and sinking into their amative bond. In the next few days, they do argue about it. Ed doesn't want to pick fights, but the call is becoming more obvious every day. He can't stop thinking about it. The dream, the memories, the omnipresent buzz that's fizzling under his skin. It's getting worse for Steed, too, but he's still being stubborn. Ed has never been good at remembering to eat. After a few more days pass, he frowns.
"When's the last time I ate?"
he asks Steed.
"Beats me. I think it was like 2 days ago."
Steed's mind wrinkles with confusion. "I don't think I've eaten since then either." Ed forces himself to eat, but it's unappetizing. He's also sleeping less, until finally he can't sleep or eat at all. He doesn't feel sickly or weak. If anything, he feels energized, his every molecule vibrating to leave, to seek, to join. Steed is right there with him, and he keeps fucking Ed to distract him away from the very fucking obvious conclusion that they have to go. And the thing is, Steed wants this. More than Ed. He yearns to be chosen, to be a part of something bigger than himself. Steed's dreamed of being called since he was a young Scylla, and his fears about some big bad sea guy tearing Ed apart are nothing compared to giving Steed this. Steed has confirmed, after some grumping, that yes, Scylla always come back from the Cascade, and no, Scylla hasn't attacked a human in living memory. "I'm not even fully human anymore." Steed eats his ass to keep from arguing again. 5 days after Jeffrey's visit, Steed sleeps and dreams of being swallowed.
"Fine," Steed says. "Fine, we can go."
Ed tries not to be too smug about it. End of chapter 2. Chapter 3. Ed's been beneath the water before, obviously, especially since the shift. He loves to float down there, loves to get fucked below the waves, but he's never been this deep, down where the light turns blue and strange, where Steed's golden skin turns pale ethereal blue, where the colors turn flat, then disappear into a ghostly glow. He's not sure if the light is real or just some kind of Scylla magic. They've been traveling for 2 days already. Steed is carrying him on his back, Ed's arms locked tight around Steed's shoulders, and his legs tangled in tentacles as they speed through the warm blue Caribbean sea. They're headed for the Pacific, apparently, for the spot Jeffrey indicated, and Steed seems confused when Ed tries to ask how he planned to get through Central America. Ed's pretty sure Scylla aren't sneaking through the locks of the canal. He'll find out soon enough, he figures, because they're moving faster than he's ever fucking moved in his life, except for maybe when on a plane. They've been swimming nonstop, cutting through the water like a missile, stopping only to get their bearings every few hours, and to let Ed stretch his arms and take a few deep breaths of air. Although Ed doesn't think they even need to do that. Now that they're finally on their way, the call is tugging them relentlessly forward, directing them, and he knows it's even stronger for Steed. They still haven't needed to eat or sleep or anything else besides swim. Ed feels like a salmon swimming to spawn, driven by a bizarre biological imperative he doesn't understand, and it doesn't let anything get in its way. They start to come close to land around mid-afternoon on the third day. The seafloor rises up to meet them, and Steed tugs them upwards into the sparkling shallows, the water warm and glittering around them. It's no more than 50 feet deep or so, and there are boats rushing around, skimming the surface. Ed watches their silhouettes with trepidation, but Steed doesn't seem concerned.
"They can't see us," he says when Ed asks. "We're too far down, and besides, the ocean hides us."
"Hides us? What does that mean?"
Steed gives a mental shrug. "The same connections that let me find creatures for Jim and Alu," he says. "Just the other way around."
"Huh,"
says Ed, and nuzzles into Steed's neck.
"They really can't see us?"
"We'll see if you start that up," scolds Steed as Ed nips at his neck. "Especially if you start broadcasting your arousal like that. They'll start wondering when they developed an affinity for fish."
"Gross," says Ed. "They can feel me."
Steed reaches up and weaves his fingers in Ed's where they hang on over his sternum.
"I can't make them ignore us if you're turning the whole ocean red with your mind,"
he replies. "But it's fond. Might." Ed sighs and tries to ignore his arousal. It's strange. He's always found Steed incredibly attractive, incredibly arousing, but lately it's been like never before. He thinks it must have something to do with the cascade. He's not complaining, exactly, but it's inconvenient, especially since Steed seems less affected than he is. "Now I just have to remember where," Steed mutters, and Ed sees the mental map he's drawing through their bond, sees the shape of the coastline.
"We're off the coast of Panama?"
he asks, sending a map from the usual human satellite perspective. Steed sends back an affirmation, but he's distracted.
"Are we taking the canal?"
Ed asks, dubious.
"The human water boxes? Absolutely not." "Then you know there's a whole, like, 50-mile-wide isthmus in the way, yeah?"
"You'll see." "Ha!" Steed darts forward, and Ed tightens his arms at the sudden change in velocity. Steed's diving quickly, darting between boulders until... "Here it is," says Steed. "I haven't been here in years." There's a dark hole in the crevice between two shelves of rock, a gap only visible from below, near the ocean floor. Steed swims towards it. It's barely wide enough for the two of them pressed close together. Ed has a moment of anxious fear, even though he knows he can breathe underwater, and that Steed would be able to get him to the surface in an emergency. Still, the idea of a tunnel underwater kind of freaks him out. "We don't have to go," Steed says, but Ed knows that Steed knows it's not true. They do have to go. They couldn't stop now if they tried. The cascade is like a siren blaring in his mind, a long, low call vibrating every cell of his body and orienting him like a compass southwest, drawing him forward. Ed rolls his neck and his shoulders, trying to work out some of the kinks from being wrapped around Steed for days.
"Let's go."
Steed sends a pulse of love, trust together down their bond, and pulls them forward into the gap. He has to contort himself to fit through it, some of his tentacles finding purchase on the rocks, and others cradling Ed even closer, and Ed buries his face in Steed's neck to keep from having to look at the very narrow gap they're squeezing into. It's fucking impressive that the Scylla have a tunnel under Panama. That doesn't mean he's going to enjoy a trapped, airless swim 50 miles long. It's not actually as horrifying as Ed expected. The tunnel is smooth-walled, widening out from the crack in the rock they squeezed through. It's maybe 15 feet in diameter for most of it, twisting up and down and side to side, and occasionally narrowing to less than 10 feet, but never for long. It feels natural.
"Steed,"
Ed asks as they turn a corner. There are glowing patches of bioluminescent moss scattered through the tunnel every dozen feet or so,
Enough to crack the total blackness and guide them through the curves. What's this tunnel? Where did it come from?
I'm not sure, admits Steed. I think it started as a natural gap, and erosion in the local shoals widened and smoothed it over time. We've been using it for hundreds of years.
Ed wraps his legs around Steed's torso and squeezes his eyes shut until he can get his pulse under control. He trusts Steed completely, and Steed is thrumming a smooth tempo through their bond, which helps a lot. Protection, love, comfort. Safety, belonging, love.
Ed opens his eyes again and loses himself for a while as they swim through the tunnel. Something in Steed's mind shifts, which means the tunnel is about to change, and Ed gasps when they come into the cavern. Sparkling is the first word that comes to Ed's mind. Glittering. Shining. It's brighter than it has any right to be. The walls catch the faint glow from a few ragged clumps of moss and transmute their soft light into kaleidoscopic brilliance. There are clusters of what he's pretty sure is quartz on every surface, bursting out in uneven jagged chunks of stone, oblong prisms and pyramids. Sleek black volcanic rocks are interspersed among them, reflecting the flicker and spark of the crystals. Everything seems more intense suddenly, in his mind and body, as the crystals and stones magnify the moss beams a thousandfold. The opening is big, big enough they can stretch their legs and Steed can stretch his tentacles to their full extensions. Steed slows and then stops, twitching his tentacle tips idly to stay in one spot. Steed snakes a tentacle, and then two, and then four, around Ed's midsection. Ed shivers.
You want? Ed says.
I think you want, Steed replies. It's true. Ed is hard, has been hard. For how long, he doesn't know. He's been extra horny these last few weeks, waking up full of slick, strange dreams, and curling into Steed even more than usual. He wants Steed, always does, but there's been an urgency to it lately. An urgency that's building in him now as he tightens his arms around Steed's shoulders, buries his face in the crook of his neck. He needs Steed, needs to be closer to him, as close as he can be. And something about this place is amplifying his heightened desire even further, bouncing it off the walls and into Steed and back to him. He pulls himself even tighter to Steed. The pressure between their bodies is sweet relief. Although it's not enough. Steed resists, pushes Ed back a bit. He's still wrapped in tentacles, but only the ones around his midsection are holding him tightly, the others keeping him close but loose around his skin. Steed reaches down with several tentacles, Ed can't tell how many, and wraps them one by one around his dick. They pulse and squeeze and twist. Ed groans, bubbles spilling from his lips. He grips into two of Steed's tentacles and lets himself drift away in pleasure. It doesn't take long until he's coming into the water around him, soothing his simmering restlessness.
That was quick,
Steed says. He's shivering with it, his mind running hot against Ed's own, his tentacles slick with his own fluids. There's the faint sheen of ink in the water, muting the bioluminescent glow that brightens as it bounces across the crystals. But Steed seems content to soak in Ed's bliss rather than chase his own.
Don't tease, Ed says.
Steed sparks with mirth, wraps Ed's arm securely around him once more, and jets forward. Ed is in a hazy post-orgasmic glow for a while. He loses track of time. It's hours, at least. Navigating the twists and turns. But eventually the tunnel narrows again, and they're squeezing through a tight rocky cavern until they're free. The water tastes different here, at least to Steed's senses, which are projected back to Ed. It's hard to tell without any equipment, but he's pretty sure this part of the Pacific is at least 3,000 meters deep, putting the ocean floor well into the bathypelagic zone, so the light can't be real. Or at least, it can't be normal sunlight filtering down. He thinks Steed might be glowing just a little, radiating out light from his body, When Ed looks down at their bodies, his own wrapped securely in Steed's tentacles as he's draped over Steed's back, tugged along at a speed he can't even contemplate. He can't quite tell. The light bathes Steed, but it doesn't seem to be coming from him. "It's sound," says Steed, his mind a warm, comforting weight against Ed's. "It's..." He sends information Ed can't translate into words. That's been happening more and more lately. Ed just understanding Steed without having to bring in verbal language as an intermediary. And he kind of fucking loves it. Loves their shared language and shared intimacy, and the way their minds and souls fall into sync so easily, so naturally. "It's the tentacles," Ed gathers from Steed's silent information sharing, sending out tiny pulses of sound outside the frequencies he can hear, letting them bounce around in return. His brain apparently translates this into a picture, since he's got no other apparatus in there for building spatial images out of sound. It's fucking amazing, and he wishes he could share it with Dr. Buttons, his old marine biology professor. This would revolutionize the way dolphins are studied, if Ed could prove it in a paper. His fucking echolocation, somehow interpreted as sight. His brain is echolocating. Well, Steed's brain is. Or not even Steed's central brain, the one like Ed's, the one in his head. Steed's tentacles are echolocating and beaming the information directly into Ed's brain. Fucking wild. Steed pulls him deeper, swimming forward and down. The water is heavy around them. A thick, cold blanket he knows would have crushed his frail human body just a few months ago. Before the shift. Before he got that little bit of Scylla in him. He's had more than a little Scylla in him, he thinks, making himself grin and press a quick kiss to the back of Steed's neck. He nuzzles his nose into the soft hair there, feeling him against his entire body. Steed's hair waves like kelp in the currents as they arrow through the water, slick against his philtrum, his cheek. He can almost smell Steed, can almost taste him on the water. He can feel his heat, plastered warm against Ed's front. And he shifts restlessly against the hot bands of tentacles holding him tight to Steed's back, wrapped like thick ropes around his thighs. There's something about being held close like this, unable to break free from Steed's grip, carried along like he weighs nothing. It's weirdly hot. The oppressive cold in solid sea, at least a couple hundred atmospheres down here, holy shit, holds him to Steed's back, and in the warm water pooling between them, Ed's getting hard in his trunks. "Ed?" Steed's mental voice is a little shaky, heated, as Ed's cock presses into the sensitive skin where human-looking peach turns into the slick, pale teal of his tentacles. "Ed, you... again? Already?" "Need you, Steed. Need you closer." He shifts his feet until he finds another tentacle, braces against them. "Please, this isn't enough. I'm burning out of my skin, love." "We're almost there," says Steed, but he's slowing down, relaxing tentacles from their task of propulsion and bringing them up to bracket Ed, stroke down his sides and curl around his back. "Really? You need this now?" He's not complaining, exactly, but he doesn't feel the urgency, the intensity, the way Ed does. Ed is boiling with it. Riding the waves of want that wash through him. The quick rut in the cave wasn't enough. He needs more. "Really, I do," Ed replies, grinding against Steed's skin as two tentacles curl their flexible tips around the tides of his swimsuit, loosening the drawstring before tugging it down his hips. Ed gasps as his skin meets Steed's, his cock already dripping, the cold ocean shocking and bright against it without the thin barrier of cloth. The water that had gathered between them, warmed by their shared body heat, has diffused away into the deep surrounding cold, and Ed knows intellectually that he should be freezing, crushed in this frigid water, but instead the chill is setting his nerves on fire, making Steed's body feel even hotter. "I'm not stopping," says Steed, tentacles sliding up Ed's thighs, holding him just under the creases of his ass now instead of the middle of his thighs. "I want to be there in time." "I know," Ed says. "You don't have to stop. You can fuck me and keep swimming." Steed's holding him securely, and Ed carefully lets his arms slip from their grip around Steed's shoulders. He slides his hands down his belly instead, strokes the spaces between Steed's tentacles, the sensitive webs that connect them. He slips his fingers along the edges and traces the finely pebbled skin. Steed shivers under him, his suckers fluttering against Ed's skin. Ed, Steed sighs. Ed, please. The tentacles that sprout from Steed's lower back divide and blanket Ed's thighs in hot appendages until he's wrapped in slick muscular heat against the cool water. He spreads his legs. They're still moving, but Ed can tell Steed's lost track of the direction as Ed wraps a fist around the tentacle just under Steed's belly. Not one of the tentacles on the outside that everyone can see, but one of the inner layer. The softer, thinner tentacles that aren't as used to touch, that are hypersensitive to feel and taste, more like tongues than legs. He strokes slowly, pumping his fist down its length. He lets his fingers drift further up on each stroke, as his other hand continues to trace the webs between Steed's limbs. He's learned through months of very close examination that Steed's tentacles spiral out from his core like a conch shell, like a whirlpool. He wants to measure them with his tongue, study them with his fingers, memorize them and paint them in Steed's own ink. Ed loves Steed's body, how it's a gorgeous combination of math and randomness, built so much like Ed and so differently, too. Ed fucking loves him. Ed loves fucking him. Ed is so fucking happy, and he needs to show Steed, needs to silence that whisper in Steed's brain that he's not enough, not worthy, not adequate. He's burning with the need for it, driven to the edge of wildness. They're even further down now, sinking into the depths that Ed knows humans haven't ever explored. They've sent robots, cameras, and sampling equipment, sure, but they've never been there. And it's different on his bare skin anyway. And he's got a lot of skin bare, wrapped in nothing but Steed, his swim trunks lost somewhere in the 1,000 miles of ocean behind them. They're drifting now, intertwined, with Steed's head canted back on Ed's shoulder, and Steed's tentacles rubbing all over his body. Ed's left hand delves further into the forest of tentacles, while his right continues to slide over the limb he's been teasing. His hips are rolling, sliding between two more tentacles, and it's like he's fucking Steed's thighs, but so much more, because Steed's limbs are infinitely flexible and slick, licking and nibbling at his skin with every sucker. Steed's open wide, their bond a vast universe between them. Ed sinks into it just as he sinks into Steed's body, letting his cock find Steed's slit and be drawn in by the tendrils that line it. He slips along the edge, the head of his cock sliding between the slick lips, and he gasps into the heavy water. Steed is so close he can taste him in the water, can taste the tang of his sweat, the salt of his slit leaking ink into the cold depths around him. It's a novelty to be in Steed and not be able to see the dark bloom of ink as it seeps into the water. It's a blossoming burst when he comes, but it's a slow drip when Steed is aroused. Surely dyeing the water dim and dark. But Ed can't tell, even with his enhanced vision since the shift, because he's not seeing Steed, he's hearing him, hearing the signals bouncing all around them in the dark and empty depths, and when Steed slides a tentacle against Ed's hole, he shouts. It's muted in the water, a low bubbling reverberation, but Ed can sense it. Can watch the evidence of his arousal spread through the water like Steed's ink, watches it billow out in concentric spheres around them until it fades out of sight. Ed knows physics, knows water, knows waves, and he knows that his shout of pleasure isn't gone, that it will travel miles as just a slight disturbance of molecules, and that's what pushes him over the edge, spurting hot inside Steed's hole and gasping into Steed's mind. He can taste his cum in the water, can taste the different balance of salt. He can taste it through his own mouth as the slightest tang, but he can also taste it through his skin as he breathes, And through the bond, Esteed senses every atom of the water, every microliter of Ed. He shivers and gasps and slides his hand up Steed's belly, pressing his thumb into Steed's mouth as his other hand curls into Steed's slit and tangles in the tendrils there.
Come on, he says. Show me, Steed. Show the whole ocean how much you want me.
Steed shudders, tentacles pulsing, coming up to stroke his own chest, to work their way between them to tug at Ed's nipples, to bury themselves in his hair. And Ed tilts his head to take one between his lips. He sucks, running his tongue around the edges of each sucker, pulling it in deeper. Steed moans in Ed's head, his pleasure washing over him. It rushes over them both, the waves crashing between them, and Ed's pretty sure he's about to come again. And he does, shaking with it when Steed's mind fills with white light, flowing over them until Ed is writhing. The ocean fills with the dark flavor of Steed's ink, salt and deep rich umami filling Ed's mouth, his skin, his mind, his body. Steed shudders, tenses, and goes limp against him. They float in silence in the black ocean as the evidence of their sex is washed away by the currents. After a long moment, Steed laughs, his tentacles coming up to stroke at Ed's face as they curl around his head in a silly gesture.
What was that, Ed? We're going to be late.
Are you saying you didn't enjoy yourself?
Ed asks, nuzzling the space under Steed's ear and enjoying the shiver it draws from him.
Because I'm pretty sure that was hot as hell.
You know what I mean.
Ed smiles.
I wanted you, he says. I don't know, love. I usually want you. But this was... I couldn't help it. I needed you.
You can have me, says Steed.
Ed, you can have me whenever you want, but... You're all right?
There's worry riding the edge of the question. Concern all wrapped up in fear and love. Ed frowns.
All right?
He thinks about it for a moment, feeling the pull of the cascade, the thick root of his bond with Steed. The distant weirdness of his body needing nothing but forward movement and sex. It's weird, but he's not... He's okay. Probably.
I think so. Ed presses on Steed's mind. Are you?
Steed answers with warmth, gratitude, love. Which isn't an answer, really. But it's enough for Ed in the moment. He needed this. He doesn't know why. And as his heart slows back to its usual rhythm, he pushes down a thin thread of anxiety. He's not used to feeling out of control. Steed turns in his arms and pulls Ed close to his chest, and holds him there for a long moment, pressing love, worry, satisfaction at him. Ed returns the love, soothes the worry as best he can, and nudges Steed until he starts propelling them forward again with Ed cradled close against him. Ed shivers against Steed's body, fucked out and still wanting. For the first time since meeting Jeffrey, Ed wonders if maybe he's a little out of his depth. End of chapter 3. Chapter 4. When they finally reach the place where the urgent tugging stops, Ed has to catch his breath. It's astounding. It's like nothing Ed's ever seen. There's a ring of what he hesitates to call structures, more like loose scaffolds of rock and coral and driftwood, places to hold onto in the currents and to rest in semi-privacy, he knows from Steed's open mind. There are Scylla floating in the water, and it's not a lot of people, but it's more Scylla than Ed's ever seen outside Steed's memories, and he tries not to stare. He wishes there were actual light. There are a few glowing clumps of bioluminescent matter, and he'd love to get a closer look, because the biologist in him is losing his fucking mind. But he'd love to see the way the Scylla's colors differ from Steed's, too. He finds himself being, he doesn't want to say shy, but he kind of fucking is. Fuck. He can't remember the last time he's been this intimidated by a crowd of new people. But these people, these are Steed's people. The closest thing to in-laws he's likely to get. So instead, he focuses on what's in the center of the ring of structures. He can feel the psychic bonds all around him, the way the Scylla are connected to each other, even if he doesn't know them yet. And isn't that a fucking trip? He's picking up bits of information, not people's names or anything, but their vibes, the way they relate to each other. That stocky one's prickly, has something to prove, and he's got all his energy focused on the Scylla beside him, who's directing the installation of some kind of altar-looking thing. Between the glow from the plants, and the sheer number of Scylla building mental maps of the space and sharing them through whatever network he's tapped into, he can, well, see is not the right word. He's 4,000 meters below the surface, but maybe perceive, further than he would be able to with standard vision alone. It's not just the clicks from Steed's tentacles giving him information anymore. And the sphere of water he can see clearly through has expanded exponentially with every meter they swim toward the rest of the Scylla. They're all floating a few dozen meters above a shape that rests on the ocean floor. It's long. It's long. A bulky mass of jagged angles softened by waving seagrass and swarming creatures that range in size from tiny fish to small sharks. It's... oh, sea lords! Steed's voice is a prayer, full of reverence Ed's never heard, a shaking exhalation of wonder and fear. Oh, I never thought I'd see. His voice fades away and his hands tighten on Ed's wrists where they're crossed over his chest. Ed pulls himself even closer, though his arms are starting to shake with exhaustion from hanging onto Steed so long, at such great speeds. The urgent strength is wearing off now that they're here.
What is it?
He asks gently.
Steed, please.
He feels Steed's chest rise and fall under his hands. Feels him sample the water with tongue and tentacles, examining the flavors and isolating a dark, deep, ancient black loam taste, something Ed has no analog for. It scares him, and that's not even a strong enough word. It wakes something small and terrified inside him, makes him long for the light, for warmth and air in the leafy tops of trees. A shiver runs down his spine. Makes his fingers twitch, phantom tentacles curl inward. His toes flex uselessly against the frigid water. It's not for him, this taste, this place. It's the cascade, says Steed. It's a death, it's a rebirth, it's the... He's searching for words in Ed's language, but there are no words in Ed's language. So Ed buries his face in Steed's cheek. Nuzzles into his neck, and reaches out his mind to press into his mate's. He knows he's safe, but he's fighting his monkey brain on it. The sea lords made the Scylla, fashioned them from water and the fertile boiling mud of volcanic vents, used the spark of starfall to bring them life and the rhythm of the tides to connect them, to make them look upwards and inwards, one mind and many. They built them, and set them loose, and gave them stewardship of the way the ocean's life cycles. And part of that, is this. It's a shark. It's a fucking enormous shark, a monster of a megalodon, lying spread across the ocean floor. Of course it's a fucking shark, he realizes. Of course it is, after the dreams. He doesn't know what else he could possibly have expected, but it wasn't this. Ed's a biologist, and he's married to a creature who, according to all his training, should not exist. And he's seen things in the past few years he could never have imagined, that his professors never would have believed. But this? A megalodon corpse, not more than a few dozen years old. An impossible body stretching at least 80 meters long. It shouldn't exist. It couldn't exist. Ed has argued with conspiracy guys, cryptid hunters, grad students, and preteens about megalodons, rolling out his usual line, if something that big were part of the undersea ecosystem, we'd know. Scientists would see the evidence, the washed-up teeth, the behavior of the orcas, the size-limited growth of whales and squid. A predator this big wouldn't be able to hide for long. but apparently he was wrong. Ed sends a silent apology to Professor Buttons, the advisor on his thesis, because now he has no fucking clue. Maybe Nessie is fucking real. The world is a richer fucking tapestry than Ed ever could have imagined. He can't quite comprehend the size of it, even as his trained mind recognizes the various animals feeding off the corpse and compares them to it for scale. He sees the heaping bulk of it, the shine of cartilage, the ragged skin almost smooth in the vague dappled light of the Scylla consciousness. The largest predator in the ocean, Steed says. The place where all creatures eventually find themselves, if something else doesn't get them first. Whalefall, says Ed back. Except sharkfall, I guess. Your people keep track of them? Steed knits his hands with Ed's, rubs the webs between his fingers along the skin between Ed's. We must, he says. It's our duty, given to us by the Sea Lords. We make sure that what the largest creatures gather is returned to the ocean. How? Steed doesn't say anything for a long moment, the bond sliding narrower, and Ed pushes a little, not forcing his way in, but reminding Steed he doesn't have to hide, not from Ed. Finally, Steed's shoulders slump a bit, and he says, I don't know. Ed slips into the window Steed's left open, works his way in past shame and a little bit of fear, soothing his path. There's Steed's father, turning away, Steed's classmates, whispering something, their bonds with Steed flimsy, fragile, slammed closed, the Cribdies describing the origins of the Scylla, their place in the ocean, but the terms are vague, ceremonial, the images metaphorical rather than helpful, and then loneliness. Emptiness. The closed-off face of Steed's betrothed. Steed, turning to the stories of humans, watching them instead of learning his own people's myths because no one would tell him. No one would let him in. The few pieces he knows, the Scylla maintain the network between the ocean creatures, keeping it balanced somehow. Creatures like this shark pull too much in, concentrate it, and Ed gets that. It's the whole food web situation, at least at a surface level. Down in the depths, a whalefall is an ecosystem-altering event. A creature like this one has years, centuries probably, of resources tied up in its body. Why wouldn't it be the same for the psychic energy of the sea? Steed obviously knows they've been called. He isn't denying it anymore because that itchy feeling, that unsettled yearning, is easing now that they've finally arrived. But he doesn't know what that means for them. He's learning just as much as Ed is, it seems. And Ed is ready to fucking learn. Every new thing he finds out about the Scylla is astonishing and fascinating. But he's a fucking biologist. For all that he's Steed's mate and part Scylla now, he can't help but kick his feet with glee at the idea of seeing an event like this up close.
Can we get closer?
He asks Steed. And Steed hesitates. I don't know, he says. Ed, I'm not much use to you, am I? Maybe I shouldn't even be here. I was barely even called, after all. He pulls a shield of tentacles up around himself, hiding. Ed presses through the tangle and kisses his cheek, weaves his legs in the tentacles holding them. Don't say that, love. This is fucking incredible. But I'd rather be home with you than here on my own. Besides, I'm a human, remember? From the look of surprise on Steed's face, Ed realizes that Steed had forgotten that Ed's not like other Scylla mates. Steed is finally over his fear of how Ed will fit in. He's not sure whether to be fond or annoyed, and settles for a little of each. Right, Steed says. Right, okay. He leans his face into Ed's, closing his eyes for a moment. Ed can feel him gathering himself, preparing for the interactions to come. Steed already knows the first Scylla they reach, so Ed can piggyback on Steed's faint bonds with them and start his own. One is stocky, bald, with broad shoulders, the prickly one from earlier. His companion, his mate, Ed realizes, is taller, dark-haired, soft-featured and bodied. Pete and Lucius, he picks up from Steed. The two Jeffrey had mentioned, the one Steed knew from back home.
They're from Ushul?
He asks Steed. Steed sends back a quick affirmative, and a friendly acquaintance sort of feeling, which is frankly a more positive emotion than Ed's ever felt from him about anyone from home. Along with the feeling, he drops quick background. Lucius is from his region, though not his social circle, and Pete is his mate from another shoal, and they met at a festival. Steed doesn't know them well, but the Scylla community isn't huge.
So, says the taller one, Lucius, Steed Bonnet, your father said you were eaten by a giant squid, you know.
A squid? Steed is offended, shocked, and a little hurt.
It looks like Jeffrey was telling the truth, so there's a pleasant surprise.
He looks over Steed's shoulder, meeting Ed's eyes. You did find a human lover.
This is Ed, says Steed.
He loosens his grip on Ed's body, and Ed unwinds his arms from Steed's neck. He's more comfortable in the water now. He's always been a strong swimmer, but now he can hold himself steady in the shifting currents of the deep sea with no problem. He nods at the two Scylla, sending a greeting down the wispy bonds that have already formed between them.
You're really human, says Pete, the vibrations from their tenuous bond getting more intense with his excitement.
That's so cool.
Is it?
Asks Ed. For the first time in a while, he's vaguely aware that he's completely naked, dick out in front of strangers, still a little plumped from his constant arousal despite the frigid water.
Okay.
I saved a human ship once, Pete continues. They never even saw me, but I pulled their ship from a whirlpool.
That's neat.
Ed sends a pulse of awkward, please help, to Steed. But he's in conversation with Lucius and just sends a vague, loving dismissal back.
I'm sure they were grateful.
Super grateful, says Pete.
And thank fuck, Steed's turning his attention back to Ed. Ed opens to him, and Steed sends a wince of an apology.
Sorry, he says. I forgot what Pete was like about humans.
I knew you were a human fanboy, says Ed. I didn't know there were others.
Hey, I'm not that bad, am I?
Ed can tell that while Steed's joking, he's also just the slightest bit offended. He sends a soothing stroke down their bond.
Nah, not even at first. You've always been cute about it. Not a fucking weirdo.
Thanks, says Steed dryly. Come on, let's see who else is here. He's clearly not looking forward to it. The dread and anxiety is throbbing in their bond, radiating out from Steed in waves. And look, Ed knows Steed didn't fit in with the rest of the Scylla in the brine. He doesn't want to pressure him, but he likes meeting new people, and he's dying to meet more Scylla. He knew, logically, that they had to have as much diversity of personality as humans do, but it's one thing to know and another thing to know. They swim a little closer, close enough Ed can feel the other Scylla more acutely, especially through Steed. All of a sudden, Steed's thoughts stutter in his head and go completely silent, except for the war he's having with himself over curling into a cocoon of his own tentacles. Ed doesn't have to ask what's wrong, because Steed isn't hiding it. It's Mary, his erstwhile mate-to-be. In Steed's memories, she's judgmental and cold. But once Ed sorts out her bond with Steed and wiggles along the one forming between Mary and himself, he can feel her playfulness and creativity, even through their tenuous connection. She calls out a greeting to Steed. Steed closes his eyes and sets his mouth in a thin line.
Hi, Mary.
The Scylla pair swims toward them. One is Mary. Ed can't see her coloring through the echolocation, but he can see it in Steed's mind. She has pale, creamy skin that creeps into no-nonsense black tentacles, with speckles of white all over. She's cute.
Ed, Steed says, irked.
Sorry,
Ed replies, but he's not actually sorry, and he lets Steed know it. Steed rolls his eyes, and Ed bites back a victorious grin that his teasing worked to distract Steed from his overwhelming anxiety about seeing Mary again. The other Celestie doesn't recognize, which puzzles him. Ed knows that Steed and Mary were both from important families back in their shoal, which is why they'd been set up in the first place. Rich assholes were the same underwater and on land, which was kind of comforting and also very fucked up. Not that Scylla have currency, as far as Ed knows, but he figures the point stands. "I'm Doug," says the unknown Scylla. From the... a concept like the brine slithers through Ed's head. The best his brain can do is the place near the trench that is very large, but not as large as the other trench that is not so near. "I'm Ed. Nice to meet you." "I would say I can't believe the rumors are true," Mary says, her tone dry. "But actually, I very much can." "I'm not ashamed of Ed." Steed is indignant and a little embarrassed, but he means what he's saying 100%. Ed pulses his love and fondness between their bond. "Of course you're not," says Mary. "Nor should you be," Doug hurries to add. Mary twitches the tips of her tentacles, and Ed can practically see her bond with Doug light up with affection, a mirror of what he'd just done with Steed.
"Can others tell the tone we're doing that?"
Ed says, just for Steed. "Oh, yes, we're very obnoxious about it," Steed says proudly, which makes Ed extend an even stronger strand of love to him, which Steed sends back, until it's zinging between them and building on itself.
"See, lords, we get it," Mary says. She's exasperated fond, and also appreciating Doug and his smaller, steadier public displays of affection.
Then she says, completely earnest, "I'm glad you're happy, Steed." Steed unfurls the warmth he used to have for Mary even more from inside of himself, which Mary cautiously reciprocates.
"Hey, human," Doug says. "Let me go show you where you'll be staying until the ceremony is complete."
"Sounds good, Scylla,"
says Ed, cottoning on quickly to what Doug is trying to do. They swim far enough away that Steed and Mary can have their privacy.
"So, what should we talk about?"
Ed asks. "Oh, we're going to listen in. It's just common decency to pretend we're not."
"Scylla, man.
They were odd birds. Cephala people. Whatever." Ed slips himself into Steed's mind in time to hear Mary say, "You want to know what happened with us?" Steed squirms with discomfort.
"Yes?"
"Steed, come on. We're not compatible. Do you think we'd have ever made it through the shift?"
"I don't know," Steed lies. "Maybe."
Mary flashes an unimpressed wave that Ed can feel even in his corporeal body several hundred meters away.
"How did you find the courage," Steed asks, "to leave our shoal?"
"Didn't you do the same thing?"
"Sort of,"
Steed says evasively. Ed gets a flash of embarrassed memory from Steed. He's chasing something shiny through the shallows. He doesn't see the net. By the time he's caught for true, he can hear Izzy's voice shouting,
"Fucking fuck! What the fuck is that?"
Ed feels a sudden pang of guilt at Steed's panic, at his general captivity. Steed is there, even though most of his concentration is still on Mary. Steed is there, and he reminds Ed he chose him, and he's happy, and his captivity was a necessary part of them finding each other. Ed calms down.
"Although I wish you'd stop eavesdropping," Steed says.
"Doug's here too."
"Hi, Steed," Doug says.
Steed gives a mental harumph, but doesn't shut Ed out, and turns his attention back to Mary.
"Please, tell me."
"For one thing, it's what our parents wanted, not us."
"Yes, but..."
Steed reaches inside himself and dusts off memories of Mary he's avoided thinking about for years. Growing up together, knowing each other almost since birth, making funny faces at their teachers when no one was looking. Mary rescuing Steed and dancing with him when he was being a mopey wallflower at a party. Their bond wasn't romantic, not at all, but it was warm and lived in. Until they were engaged, so to speak. He and Mary were, maybe not friends exactly, but at least they were allies. Steed offers these memories to Mary, and Mary sends some right back, of Steed bringing her seashells for her hair and helping her style it. Complaining about their parents, Steed trying and failing to appreciate Mary's avant-garde anemone art. Then Mary sends a memory that's less nice to remind Steed that she wanted to break off the engagement, and he agreed. But when she faced their parents, he hadn't supported her, and they'd almost ended up trying the shift before he was captured. Things weren't the same after that, Mary says. I got mad and you just went away. For a long time before you physically left the brine, you weren't really there. Mary sends another memory gently along their bond, of the two of them sharing a meal. Steed's face is completely blank, his eyes empty. Mary tries to ask Steed something 3 times before blasting him with her annoyance, which does make his eyes focus a little and slide to her. What's that, Mary? Did you find anything fun today at the new shipwreck you found? Fine, thanks. Mary puffs with irritation and doesn't bother to send the emotion to Steed. They eat the rest of their dinner in psychic silence as the memory fades away. Oh, dear, Steed says, back in the present. I'm sorry. Mary gently wraps the end of a few tentacles around a corresponding number of Steed's. It's all right, she says. We've both found love, and I don't think it's a coincidence that you found yourself such an unusual mate and that the Sea Lords called you both. No? Everything is a cycle, Steed. That's why we're here. Maybe our people are ready to have a relationship again. Ed thinks privately that Mary doesn't know enough about modern humans and their proclivity for ruining, well, most things. But then again, maybe there's some cosmic mystical destiny bullshit waiting out there for them, in addition to the cosmic mystical destiny bullshit in which they are currently participating. Doug? Ed? Mary calls. We're good. Let's go meet the others. They're a motley crew, the Scylla. Nobody grand or important, as far as Ed can tell, which he thinks is pretty cool. They're all mated pairs, but he's surprised to find some of them have platonic bonds, or have additional Scylla partners waiting for them back in their shoals. Lucius informs him the latter is frowned upon, but as long as pairs who haven't completed the shift don't produce offspring, it's allowed. They stay close to the 2 pairs they know, and while they can feel the other Scylla, it's less of a direct connection and more of a general psychic miasma. They're treading water in a loose circle 100 meters or so away from the shark fall. They're all holding tentacles to stay that way, which is fucking cute. What's less cute is Pete's tentacle, currently wrapped around Ed's calf. Pete had sped through the water to make sure he was next to him, but the dude is really just annoying, nothing more. Steed has a few tentacles wrapped around Ed's waist, which are what's actually keeping him steady in the currents. Pete is not deterred by Ed's psychic grumbling or Steed's warning wiggles of jealousy and protectiveness, which Lucius tells Ed is par for the course. Well, the Scylla phrase is something like, a sunfish laying more than 1,000 eggs at a time, but he's pretty sure they're comparable. The Cryptids is floating in the middle of the circle, droning about cycles and seasons and bullshit like that. And despite Ed's biologist training and general fascination with everything happening, he's a little bored. Currently, he's listing out sea creatures, apropos of nothing, and Ed tries to count them at first but loses track at around 213. Because of the nature of their communication, he's also having, and overhearing snatches of, conversation with the other Scylla there. He and Lucius are comparing human and Scylla pornography. Scylla sculpture is actually very impressive, while he and Mary are swapping Steed stories. The Cryptids can clearly hear everything, but Ed doesn't sense any disapproval. It's a little disorienting, keeping up mentally with multiple things at once like this, but he's smart as fuck and definitely has ADHD, and he gets comfortable with it quickly. The Cryptids does a thing that tugs all attention and concentration to himself. Tomorrow, he says, we will perform the ceremony. The Scylla drift away to their own structures. Ed and Steed have a cozy coral nook, and one by one he can feel the bonds between the other pairs go silent as they close themselves off to have private time with each other. Ed strokes gentle fingers along the suckers of one of his favorite tentacles. It's easier to differentiate between them here, somehow, with only echolocation to let him know which is which. Steed shivers. None of that now. Then I'll be able to feel it. I know, Ed says. I just want to be close to you. Steed surrounds him in a cloak of tentacles and cradles him softly, pressing their foreheads together. For a long while, they send soft pulses of love back and forth between each other. It soothes the background anxiety I didn't even really realize he was feeling, especially since he'd been so focused on soothing Steed and excited about the whole incredible, impossible situation. He's lulled, not exactly to sleep. He hasn't slept in days, and he doesn't think he can sleep this far down. But to something like it, surrounded by Steed's physical and mental adoration and reassurance. How many hours later, he's not sure. But eventually, Steed says, it's time. Ed already knew it somehow. He could feel it in his bones, in the secret amphibian sense in his brainstem that's keeping the ape inside him from losing its shit underwater. He nods his understanding and lets Steed lead him into the web of energy swirling around them. End of chapter 4. Chapter 5. His bond with Steed changed his life, connected him to another person in a way he'd never imagined. It opened him up to the way the currents of the sea are more than just water, the way the other creatures of the sea are part of the same system as he is. But forming bonds with these Scylla is different. The bonds aren't as intense, not by an order of magnitude, but they're binding, interweaving, a web of communication and connection that wraps Ed in psychic energy and makes his bones rumble inside his skin. The Cryptid's overseeing it all is a huge presence, a throbbing nexus in the web. Strands connect him to Steed and to the other Scylla, spiraling out from his glowing center. The rest of the ocean, maybe the rest of the world, is linked in with them, the thinnest threads pulsing off into the distance. And Ed's aware of it in a way he can't quite articulate, even in his own mind. Something is supposed to happen here, something important, and he's a part of it.
Let go,
says the Cryptid, but it's not in words. Ed relaxes his mind, letting the energy around him pull him in. He lets it carry him, lets it urge him and Steed into a spot by one of the structures surrounding the shark fall. Finding a place where the currents swirl in opposite directions and leave a stationary spot. He curls his fingers around the tentacle Steed has wrapped around his wrist and reaches out his mind to feel the other Scylla taking the places they're shown to by the psychic web. The water's changing, the taste and feel of it shifting, and it makes his heart pound in his chest, his pulse throb in his ears. There's a dark cloud billowing off the shark, seeping into the water. It's like Steed's ink in the moonlight, iridescent and dark, but it's not a color, because he's not seeing with light. The color tastes rich and deep, and Ed tries not to think about what he might be breathing in down here, but the thought is distant enough that it flits by like a minnow. The itchy fire under Ed's skin isn't gone, but it's being directed now, aimed in a way it hadn't been before. All the strange neediness, the desperate horniness he's been feeling the last few weeks is all sharpening to a fine point inside him as he breathes deeply, the shining, sparkling water spinning in ribbons around him. The logical part of his brain, the biologist part, the human part, the part taking the information Steed's sharing and melding it with everything he knows about the ocean, says this is some kind of chemical reaction. Some sort of process or byproduct of the way the water and the ecosystem interact with the shark's bones. But as he takes another breath of the impossibly glittering, oil-slick water, he can tell there's more to it than that. He can see the waving fronds of bone-eating worms on the carcass, the currents shifting the beds of mollusks anchored to the last of the flesh, the clouds of krill and tiny fish flitting into the enormous chest cavity and back out. There's a truce here. Between the small sharks that weave through the ribs, and the strange bulbous fish from the deep, and the crabs scuttling along the sand, all leaving each other be, with the Scylla watching over it all. The silver sparkle in the water shouldn't be there. There's no light here, nothing to reflect or be reflected in this world of shapes defined by sound. But he can see it. He can see it glitter like moonlight on cut diamonds, but somehow it's richer, each particle a thousand-sided shape catching starlight from the deep. This is sulfophilia, he knows. The bones transmuting into sulfuric compounds to be devoured by the smallest denizens of the deep ocean. But that's not something he should be able to see. It's more than that, and he knows from Steed's mind that this is a religious event. This is something that happens once a decade at most. Something that calls Scylla from across the world to do something. Steed doesn't know either. The Charybdis appears, and Dad's not sure where he came from, because all of a sudden he's just there, in the center of the circle. He's floating a dozen meters above the loose skin of the shark, his tentacles weaving in and out of the schools of fish, entangling with a pair of sleek squid. Steed's tentacles curl in on themselves and pulse out another wave of sound, the echoes bouncing back to clarify the picture that Ed's mind has built, and...
Buttons?
He says in surprise, forgetting to close his psychic voice off to only Steed. The Charybdis turns to look at him.
Aye,
he says, and fuck, it's fucking Dr. Buttons, Ed's fucking thesis advisor. But it's not. Because Buttons was definitely human. Ed saw him moonbathing enough to know he absolutely had legs and all that came with them. But this Scylla looks exactly like him, with long hair floating on the currents, wide eyes and narrow shoulders over a sunken chest, and he even has the scar on his lower belly from the swordfish who speared him as a child.
Edward? How are you?
Ed shakes his head.
What are you?
Do not ask. Says Buttons. You'd be better not knowing.
The sea is deep, better teach. Deep and full. You're needed here, and so am I.
Ed starts to ask, but he finds he can't. Like a glass wall has been erected around him.
Listen and watch,
says Buttons. Ed curls his hand tighter in Steed's grip, nudging his ankle into Steed's tentacles until Steed winds one around his calf. Something's building in him with every breath in, with every brush of the shimmering, impossible water against his skin. Steed's hand is hot in his, and as Buttons begins to send out a wash of psychic energy, opening even further the channels between all the Scylla present and the larger ocean web, Ed feels a little faint. And then there's a presence, something new in his mind, something unfathomably huge. Ed shivers and curls closer to Steed. There's a sound pressing on his eardrums, a low rumble traveling through the water, deeper than Ed thought his ears could even detect. It shudders through his bones, settles alongside his lungs, and pounds his heartbeat into a new rhythm. He's never heard anything like it. It's almost like whale song, except it's a thousand times more powerful. As if it's thrumming through water a thousand times thicker. Not cut by the spaces between the molecules, not losing any of its intensity to bubbles of air. This is how it's meant to be heard.
Steed,
he manages. He can't say more, not with the pressure on his mind and body.
Yes, Steed replies. I know. Just listen.
Relax. It's safe.
I know. It's so much.
Steed reaches into the amative bond, tugs at Ed, pulls him closer and wraps himself around Ed's mind. It's the slightest cushion, a little bit of a buffer, and Ed takes a deep, shuddering inhale and exhale, his chest finally able to expand again. The song echoes oddly, bouncing through the water. Now that Steed has eased the pressure inside his head, he can isolate the tone of it, recognize the patterns and frequency. It's a blue wail, that mournful deep cry he's heard echoing through the bottom of Jim and Dalu's boat, magnified a thousandfold. No human has ever heard it like this, like it should be heard.
It's fucking humbling.
And then there's another sound joining the weight in his head, another overwhelming presence, balancing out the first. It's a humpback, calling out its welcome in clicks and low hums that make Ed's teeth clatter, his eyelids flutter and his spine arch. He's barely conscious, the pressure incredible on his mind, when there's a third, and this one he knows, this one he's heard. Because Ed spent 1,000 nights or more listening to recordings and motoring out to float in the bay and press his ears to the floor of the boat to hear this one. Balaenoptera physalis, the fin whale, the subject of Ed's fucking dissertation. It's like a heartbeat, and he feels his heart slow to match the thundering beats, rhythmic, pounding, deep. The first time he heard one, he'd stopped in his tracks, dropped the line he was supposed to be pulling, and stared into the water like he was possessed. He never tired of hearing their calls, even after recording dozens of them, and listening to thousands more. He knows this whale, knows its habits, its songs, can pick out individuals and pin them on a map by frequency alone, and there. There's a huge shadow above him. There's a shadow and a presence. And he knows this whale. It should be impossible, because there are 100,000 fin whales, more than that. He shouldn't be able to recognize one whale's voice. But there was a night, just before he quit his PhD program, when he'd taken Jim's boat out alone and floated under the sliver of moon in the wide sprawl of the Milky Way. He'd lain on the fiberglass, stared up at the sky, and let himself weep. He had felt alone, so fucking alone in the entire universe, just Ed and the stars. And then a noise had started up from the sea around him. It slid through the fiberglass of the hull and sunk into his body, unclenching the fine muscles around his eyes and lining his spine. The rhythm had calmed his racing heart, pulled his fear and grief from him like a tide, and washed it out to the deep sea. This is the same whale. It's the same whale. It presses in on his mind, and there's a welcome there, a familiarity across the gaping gulf between their species. His mind suddenly pops up with Star Trek IV, Spock and Gracie, a bond across species. This communication isn't like that. No words are exchanged. No real concepts besides greeting and recognition. Since they're too different for anything more, but it's fucking mind-blowing. Steed's thumb strokes along its pulse point, pulling him from the memory, a questioning nudge at his mind. Ed sinks into him, opens the memory, shares it with Steed. Steed's joy flows over and through him, swelling into his chest. "You were one of us from the start," he says. "You've always been meant for the sea."
"I guess so,"
says Ed, and pulls back mentally, closes his eyes, lets the three songs weave together and be joined by more. They buoy him up, pull him from the overwhelming weirdness of the corpse below him and the sea around him. He latches onto Steed in the rhythm of the dance, lets himself flow with it instead of fighting it, and the pressure eases. It's not crushing him anymore. It's flowing through him. He's moving with the current, not fighting it, and he feels the web around him ease, flow, whirl freely. "That's it," says Steed, and Ed can feel the echoes of the others in the circle. Doug and Mary, Pete and Lucius, Buttons, the other Scylla stretching to the limit of his strange sound vision. And above it all, he feels the whales, and through them, the reverberations flowing into the ocean around them. He's a bead of dew at the center of a spider web, seeing the fibers stretching out in all directions, feeling the vibrations coming back to him from every minuscule motion. He's a waving string of kelp floating on the currents, caught in one, then another, feeling movement from every kicking foot and every splashing dolphin, from the shifting tides and overlapping waves. The only way he can put it into words, and he barely puts things into words these days, unless he's dealing with humans, is to say the ocean is one. He is one tiny thread in a tapestry, One pebble in a peak, one drop of water in a rushing current. But at the same time, he's the whole cloth, the whole mountain, the whole undulating system of oceans. Ed's never going to be the same after this. He knows it in his core. He's not sure what happens next, because he's not Ed, not for a long time. He's just one fiber as they weave together, as he and Steed meld. The other Scylla join in, first in pairs, then in one mass, because the ancient energy in the cascade is far too much for one, or two, or even seven Scylla on their own. But together, like braided rope, like woven silk, like a sparking neuronal network, together they can. The energy rises and rises, filling Ed to the brim with burning black light, hot like ice on bare skin, razor sharp and overflowing. He's sure if he opens his mouth or his eyes, it'll blast out like Cyclops, like fucking Godzilla, because he can't contain this. And there's Steed's hand in his. The only part of his body that feels real as Buttons pulls them in, directs them, slices the torrent crashing through him into threads of current, into rushing streams. Ed remembers reading about the creek in England that looks like a babbling brook, but is actually the deadliest body of water in the world. And that's what this feels like. Like if he falls in, he'll be lost forever, dragged out of himself into the deep ocean, spread like sugar melting into water, disappearing, diffusing. He feels Steed's body, feels tentacles, suckers, fingers from inside the bond and against his skin, and he's overwhelmed with his love for the ocean and his love for Steed. It fills him alongside the cascade, a counterpoint that reminds him who he is when he's not part of this. He holds on to it tightly with the tendril of his mind as Buttons marshals them into a swirl so intense, Ed can't tell if his body is moving or if it just feels that way. They work the energy they're channeling into a tide, pulling it from them and through them. There's an oily resistance, a thick, muffling layer that makes Ed's bones shiver, but he grits his psychic teeth along with the others and shoves. They burst through the restriction and blast upwards, shredding energy into droplets of pure light, diffusing through the ocean and back to the surface like a rainstorm in reverse. It surges through the surface, raining down on the waves like a thunderhead breaking. The bones collapse in on themselves in a whoosh of released tension, swirls of glittering dust curling off of them as they settle. But with the pinging, precise echolocation winding through the cascade connection, Ed can see that it's not dust at all. It's tiny shrimp, moving in sync like a flock of birds, banking and swooping on the currents as they travel from the bones into the water within the circle of Scylla and Ed. The voice of the scientist within him, tiny now but still present, is clamoring for a sample, for a microscope. But the rest of him tells that voice to shut it. "They're rising to the surface," says Steed, a tiny private link in the massive energy connecting the group. "They're bringing everything that's been concentrated in the cascade back into the sea."
"And then what?"
"And then it all just begins again." Steed curls his tentacles closer around Ed's wrist and ankle, warm and firm, holding him in place as the cloud of krill spreads further towards them. And suddenly, Ed can feel more than just the ocean. He can feel the whole world. He can feel Jim and Alu and Izzy back on land. Jim's self-restraint and healing pain. Alu's temperance and kindness. Izzy's fear and anger holding him back from everything he desperately wants. He sinks into the island general store clerk's fears for his sons and his pride in his daughter. His dreams of retirement and love for his wife. And through Ed, the other Scylla can feel the humans too, and suddenly, it's too much. He's everyone and no one, and he's been riding this knife edge of existence, holding on to himself by the skin of his teeth for so long, and he slips as the skeleton rumbles beneath them. And he's not Ed anymore. He's nothing. No one. Everything. Everyone. End of chapter. Chapter 6. There's something changing in the water. Ed can taste it in his own mouth, muted. It's more intense through Steed's tentacles, through Buttons and Lucius and Mary and the rest, through the gills of the fish swimming between them. It's a rich, complex flavor, sour like cherries, dark like red wine. It's alien, nothing his brain can comprehend, and it terrifies the vulnerable land mammal in him at the same time as it draws him in, fascinating him. It surges through the salt of the water, cuts through the bitter tang of sulfur from the volcanic vents, and drowns out the faint hints of the other Scylla, the whales, the rot. It's all Ed can taste, and he lets his eyes drift shut against the blackness of the ocean, lets it fill him. He wants more. He wants. Buttons is saying something, but he doesn't understand. The Scylla respond, but he can't parse it. Time passes, and all he can feel is the energy of the cascade rebounding through his body, Steed's body, the heat of his own blood pounding in his ears. It's over. The ceremony is over. His eyes flutter open. The bones are glowing now, just a little, but the light, real light, not echoes through sound, is shocking in the deep, dark water. The bond holding the group together, holding them to the world, slides out of his mind. It's still there. Ed can feel it. They'll all be linked now. Forever, maybe. But he's back in his body. Sort of. His body is wrong. Something's intensifying in him. The cherry sour scent filling his mouth and lungs. The tang of blood on the water. The edge of burning heat in his chest. Ed can't breathe. He can't breathe. He's under millions of tons of water. He's trapped in one small, fragile body. And he's boiling, and he can't fucking breathe. And as soon as the link connecting the circle snaps, he flails backwards, falling until the only thing connecting him to Steed is the faintest curl of fingertips. His body is overflowing with sensation, and something inside him is clawing to get out. His hips shift wildly, fucking against nothing, and when they brush Steed's tentacles, Ed groans, muffled by the thick water. Buttons is saying something to Steed, but Ed can't pick it up, and the other Scylla are crowding around them. It's too much, too close, and Steed's tentacles flare out in a bright flash of display, and Ed loses some time, but then they're in a cave, and they're alone. Steed's got him cradled close in his arms, Ed's hips pressed to Steed's waist. "What happened?" he asks, hazy, still catching up. His body feels strange. He's hot all over. His fingertips are tingling. His heart is pounding, and he needs Steed. He needs to be closer. Even closer than he is now, curled against him. This isn't like the urgency he felt during the trip to the Cascade. This is more. This is desperation. He needs something to hold on to. Something to feel. His hips are shifting restlessly. His cock rock hard and throbbing. His whole body so sensitized that any brush against his skin feels like 1,000 suckers are pulling at him. "We did it," replies Steed, but he sounds distracted. "The ceremony, we did it, it's done, but Ed, are you all right?"
"I think so," says Ed. "Don't let me go, please, don't."
If Steed lets him go, he doesn't know what will happen. He'll dissolve into the ocean, maybe, melt like salt into the waves. Ed still feels burst open wide, like he's a speck of dust in the entire ocean all at once, like he's everything and nothing. The only thing that seems real is the hot slide of Steed's tentacles, the firm curl of his fingers against Ed's biceps. He can feel the press of his lips moving. His tongue tracking over them, his teeth sharp against his bottom lip, and Ed realizes they're not touching him. Steed's mouth is nowhere near him. but he can feel it from inside Steed. Like he's back in Steed's body, but he's in his too. And he's so fucking hot, and he can't...
Steed, he gasps.
He can feel the entire ocean pressing in on him. He can feel Steed's mind, a glowing hot ember in the darkness, surrounded by a cloud of tiny burning lights, his tentacles, their tiny fragments of mind at once part of Steed's and separate, too. Outside the cave, he can feel Mary and Lucius, the great glowing sun that's buttons, the faint wisps of Doug and Pete and the other Scylla. He can feel the deep dark red glow of the shark, spreading out in tumbling tendrils across the seafloor. That glow is seeping through the cave walls, dripping into Ed's muscles, leaving them languid and warm despite the cold water. The water still tastes hot and reddish bronze, like oversweetened coffee with a hint of tamarind, and every heavy, watery breath he draws in spreads more heat through his core. He's grinding himself against Steed, running aimlessly, and Steed's arms flex around him, holding him tighter.
I've got you, says Steed, steadying him, an anchor holding him in place. Ed, what's happening?
Faintly, Ed senses Buttons' presence, and it's both Buttons's at once, human and Scylla overlaid like waves colliding and canceling each other out in a throbbing contradiction. He feels him press knowledge into Steed's mind and then withdraw, a standing wave, still palpable.
What is it?
He manages, face buried in Steed's neck.
What's happening?
It's the krill, the chemicals they release when they change, Steed says, urgency in his voice, and his skin is hot too, heating up against Ed's. It affects the bond, our bond. Sometimes it takes people this way, he says, but not usually this strongly. He thinks it's because you're human. It's dangerous, Ed. Please, focus on me.
Fuck, Steed, says Ed. I need you, love. Need you in me. Need to be in you to feel real. To know where I am. Who I am. I don't know if I can stand this. It's too much.
The concepts flood out of him, swamping the bond, spreading out on the waves. Steed pulls him closer, wrapping him in more tentacles, the suckers pulling at his skin. They're gentle at first, and Ed writhes against them, needing more, shoving the feeling of overwhelming emptiness down the bond, until Steed shudders with it, stuffed full of Ed's secondhand longing in addition to his own. Ed feels echoey and strange, like he's been filled with the entire ocean and then suddenly drained, which is kind of exactly what happened, the ever-present scientist inside him points out. He's still reaching for that fullness, not sure how to pull it all back in. He feels like he's in Steed's body again during the shift, like he's got 1,000 tentacles stretching out for miles and he can't control them, can't reel them in. He's spiraling out, the whirlpool of his thoughts spreading wide, unraveling, and... Ah! There's a bright flare of pain under his jaw. His entire consciousness narrows to the grounding agony of Steed's sharp teeth pricking into the soft flesh of his neck. He gasps and presses closer, opening up to Steed. He tries to focus on him, on his presence in Ed's mind, but he spins out again, pulled by the currents, and Ed's a strand of kelp on the waves, a wisp of ink in the foam. He's nowhere and everywhere, tugged apart and...
Fuck, Steed!
The pain comes again, sharper this time. Steed is nipping at him, plucking his consciousness like a violin string, concentrating the cacophony inside him down to a single note for one perfect moment, and then it's gone.
Yes, more, please. I know, says Steed. I know what you need. You need to be here. You need to know where you are.
Yeah, Steed, I feel so... I can't...
It's the krill, releasing the energy into the water, says Steed, and Ed can feel his panic spreading through the web of his psychic connections. We need to get it out of your system, to center and cleanse you, Ed, or else you'll get lost in the waves.
Lost?
Ed's panting, which doesn't do any fucking good because he's panting water, and his body can't take any more oxygen from it than he's already getting, and he doesn't really know how it works anyway. But it's not fucking helping. The energy we released, says Steed, and he's curling more tentacles around Ed, wrapping him in a cocoon of thick limbs, holding him down and together. You don't have the barriers we do. You don't know how to protect yourself. I should have thought, this is what I was afraid of. He's spiraling out too, Ed can feel it, but he can't be there for Steed to hold on to when he's falling apart himself. He pulls it together just long enough to send Steed a blast of heat, and want, and need, and Steed. Fuck, Steed understands, because they've always been in sync, always been two pieces of a puzzle that no one else could solve. He tugs Ed even tighter, letting his suckers open up and nibble Ed's skin, the drag of fine teeth sharp and hot all over his bare limbs. Ed groans and tries to use the pain to set a boundary, to create a border to his field of sensation to define his edges where they fuzz and foam and crumble into the water. But he can't quite. He's melting into the lava just below the crust. He's crushed into dust like the bones. He's throbbing in time with the rhythm of the tides. His cock is aching, his mouth wide open as he gasps. More, he begs. Steed holds tighter, digging his nails into his skin, lighting him up with constellations of pain, and it's almost perfect. But Ed can still feel himself drifting, his cock throbbing between his legs, his balls hot and loose and floating. Steed, I need you to fill me up. I need you around me and inside me. Hold me together, take me apart. Ed hears Steed's long, low groan through the bond. Steed's never been so close to him, never been so in Ed's consciousness, and Ed needs his body just as deep inside him as his mind is. His body is loose and empty and waiting, and he reaches out with his mind, grabbing for Steed's tentacles, taking control of one of them and pulling it up to his ass. He slides it along his crack until it gets the idea, and Steed shudders. He noses at Ed's ear, bites his earlobe, and fucks into him in one smooth slide. His tentacle is slick and almost too thick, curling as it shoves into him. Another follows only seconds later, before Ed's had time to adjust, but it's perfect. It's hot and silky and perfect inside him, giving him a bright pulsar of pleasure and pain to zero in on. He flails an arm, one arm, his arm, and grabs for another tentacle, dragging it through the heavy water to shove into his mouth. He sucks it in, laving it with his tongue and working it through his throat. He's completely cocooned in Steed's tentacles, every inch of him surrounded in smooth heat. And it's like his whole body is his cock, sensitized and sparking with starbursts. There are three tentacles in his mouth now, or maybe four, stretching his lips wide and pressing down on his tongue. But it's not enough. It's not enough. He needs more Steed inside him. Steed slides the tentacles out and tugs Ed upward into a desperate kiss, his long, miraculous Scylla tongue wrapping around Ed's, probing down his throat, scraping against his cheeks and teeth. Ed moans and chokes a little, and Steed withdraws. I want to give you what you need, but Ed, I don't know. Steed begins, but before he can continue, Ed shoves himself downward, pushing his face through the mass of Steed's unoccupied tentacles, until he reaches Steed's pink, heated slit. He parts the lips with his fingers, curls his hands around the tendrils, and licks over the soft, pebbled flesh in one firm stripe. Steed cries out, not just in their bond, but with his physical voice, too, bubbles floating into the water around them. It seems unthinkable that they've never tried this before, but neither of them had ever considered it, and that's preposterous, because Ed's mouth cannot get enough. He's nibbling and sucking and licking, teasing Steed as much as he can despite the urgent need thrumming through his own body. He sends a spark to ask Steed if it's okay, and Steed replies frantically, yes, yes, and then Ed's tongue is tracing its way into Steed's most secret, sanctified place. He's been inside Steed so many times, but this is different. His tongue is in many ways more sensitive than his dick, and the sharp tang of Steed's ink is so much more intense here. The tentacles inside of Steed's hole grip and writhe, each seeking out his fervent attention. Ed pushes even deeper against and into Steed, pressing his whole mouth, his nose, his chin inside him. He doesn't need his face to breathe down here, after all. He finds one small fluttering tentacle and sucks it fully into his mouth. "Oh, sea lords," Steed says, before he loses coherency. How long Ed spends with his mouth inside Steed's hole, he doesn't know. The inner tentacles keep vying for his attention, pulsing in and out, relishing in the feel of his tongue as he runs it over the bumps they form when they retract. Steed's leaking ink into Ed's eyes and nose, grounding him in his body, and the sharp sting of it only adds to the sensation of Steed's pleasure through the bond, and the pinpricks of his suckers on his skin, and the ferocious push of Steed's tentacles inside his ass, and the relentless pulse and tug of them around his dick. Steed comes with a blast of white heat through the bond, a tide of pleasure rolling through them both, and the full rush of ink all around Ed's face is enough to make him pull back, to return to Steed's mouth, and Steed moans at the taste of his own ink on Ed's tongue. It sates Ed, barely, for just a moment, but it's still not enough, for him or for Steed. He's still cocooned in a mass of tentacles with Steed, the two of them in their own cave of hot flesh inside the stone cavern, and Steed shifts until his secret center presses hot and slick against Ed's stomach. His tendrils stretch out and drag over Ed's skin. They grab at his cock, dragging it in, and he buries himself in Steed's heat as Steed fucks into his ass, into his mouth. They're overlaid on each other, and he can feel Steed's tentacles inside him, can feel his own cock inside Steed, can feel the drag of sandpaper teeth on his rim, and the ridge of his cock head against Steed's slit, every feeling reciprocal and overwhelming. He needs this, needs to be wrapped up in bodily sensation, needs Steed against him. He's not the whole ocean anymore. He's two people who are nearly one. Steed nips at him again, teeth digging into his shoulder hard enough to break the skin, and Ed thinks he's maybe been coming for hours already, but the pleasure ratchets up another notch, whirls him higher. The currents are crashing them together now, pounding him in the rhythm of Steed's tentacles. He reaches down and curls his fingers in the tendrils between them, feeling Steed's plush, mobile inner wall shifting with the slide of his cock. He lets the tendrils drag his hand even closer, and he shoves his fingers in beside his cock, stroking his own body inside Steed's, feeling the slick flesh of Steed's hole shiver with want. He's barely feeling any pain from the teeth of Steed's suckers, but it's grounding him still, helping him feel his edges. He has a shape, has a place, knows who and where and why he is, defined by the sharp lines of pain Steed draws for him. The want, the urgency, the need for Steed is settling in beside his bones now. Steed slides another tentacle, is that 4, 5, a dozen, into Ed's hole, and curls another around the base of his cock in a tight spiraling grip, undulating with every thrust. Ed cries out with his mind, blasting his pleasure into the ocean around them as he's speared, run through, filled like he's never been filled before. Steed is shuddering under him, ink pumping into the tight cocoon of tentacles keeping them linked, keeping them safe, keeping them in their own little realm away from the rest of the universe, and suddenly, Ed knows who he is. Ed knows what he is, knows the intimate boundaries of his body and mind. And he's emptying his whole self into Steed, into the water, into everything they are, together and separately. He's not the ocean anymore, not Steed, not Buttons or Mary or the shark or the whales. He's that Ortiz, A human who loves Acilla, and he knows himself to his core. They float in the cave for what might be minutes, days, hours. The evidence of their pleasure, the faint tint of Ed's sour salty cum, Steed's rich dark ink, washes out on the currents, spread into the sea to diffuse into every raindrop and curl of wave. Ed can still feel the other Scylla, faintly, but they're not part of him anymore, and nor is the ocean. It's like a strange dream, the way he felt earlier, right after the cascade. Like for just a moment, he'd been the entire planet. And gods and sea lords, what a moment it had been. He pulls himself closer to Steed, sliding fingers down his ribs to rub his thumbs over the space where his colors change. He doesn't need to see it anymore to find it, can sense the slight variations in texture that mark the transition from peach to turquoise. "Are you all right?" Steed asks, but Ed knows Steed can feel the answer is more complicated than a yes or no. "Never better," Ed says anyway, which is true, even if his need for sunlight and air is now pressing back into his mind with some amount of urgency. "Let's go back to the surface," Steed says. "It's done now." Ed can feel that, can tell he's not needed here, that he doesn't fully belong here. Not anymore, at least. "We should say goodbye first," he replies. They swim out of the cave and meander back to the shark fall. The other Scylla are there, occupying themselves. But Ed can feel... oh, shit. He can feel the awkwardness, because they definitely know exactly what just went down in their little love cave. "Oh, dear," Steed says, realizing it at the same time. "It's fine," says Ed. "It'll be fine." "Welcome back," says Lucius. Sarcasm, glee, laughter in his mental voice. "I guess it hits humans a little differently, "We're fine," Steed says primly. "Just a reaction to the cascade. Nothing to worry about." "Oh," says Lucius. "We weren't worried." "Aye," says Buttons. "He figured out how to keep your human safe. I thought he might be dead by now." Love that vote of confidence. Ed pushes the thought to Steed privately. To the rest of the Scylla, he says, "Nope, totally fine, totally normal. Ready to head out." You've got a little..." Pete waves his hand vaguely at Ed's face in the dim reddish light of the crumbling shark cartilage below. "On your face." Ed reaches up and shivers when he realizes, when he sees himself through Steed's eyes, he has ink on his face, in the creases at the corners of his eyes, smudged over his lips and the bridge of his nose like an obscene face of makeup, staining his short beard dark like it had been 20 years ago. It's not washing off in the water. Maybe the water's too pressurized down here to scour it away. Or maybe Steed's ink will stain him forever. He kinda likes the idea. Likes the idea of being coated in his mate, marked by him. And Steed likes it too. Ed can feel it through the bond. He clamps down on the feeling, sends Steed a warning pulse. "Don't get me riled up again," he says privately. "Later." Steed's shiver is almost imperceptible, but the water around him oscillates with it, amplifying it. "Babe," says Lucius, eyeing Ed's face speculatively, "we are so trying that later." "Definitely," Pete replies. And Ed can feel the bond between them, thick and strong. Everything is magnified now. All the parts of the web between the Scylla and Ed and the creatures flitting between them. He brushes Mary's bond with Steed. It's much thinner than the bond between Mary and Doug, but it's older, sinewed and unbreakable despite its withered state, with a core of steel. Pete and Lucius's bond with each other has tendrils that stretch out across the sea. And Ed instinctively knows they extend to others whom they love deeply, differently than they love each other, but who are part of them too. Buttons is flitting through the crumbled remnants of the bones, sparks of light sputtering in his wake. Ed still can't understand it, but the man's presence isn't baffling to him like it was before the cascade. Ed watches him idly, thinking he should be taking notes for later or something. But he doesn't move. Instead, he leans into Steed's tentacles as they curl around him, listening to the conversations of the Scylla, and basking in the glow of new friendships, and in the contentment delight radiating off of Steed. Steed snuggles in closer, feeding Ed context for the conversations about life in the brine, and they float together as their heart rates slow to normal, and their bodies relax. End of chapter. Chapter 7. They take the trip back home slowly, stopping along the way to eat and sleep and catch up on the rest they'd missed in the frenzy of their first trip. Ed steals some clothes from a wash line on the coast, grabbing a worn purple shirt and a pair of black cotton pants, faded and soft, that hang loose from his hips. He leaves a gold coin from a shipwreck in place of his stolen goods, clipping it to the cord with the clothespin. He smiles to think what the owner will make of it. The clothes feel strange. He's been naked since, well, he's not even sure when. Since before the Cascade, at least. And he hasn't even really thought about it. Scylla are naked all the time, essentially, although their tentacles hide the parts of themselves they consider most private. But he can't live on what can be gathered from the sea the way Steed can, and he's no longer exempt from biological functions like he was on their journey to the Cascade, so he needs human contact. The pants chafe against his thighs, loose though they are, and when they're wet, which is frankly always, Ed's married to the clingiest amphibious being on the planet, they're heavy and stretched. But he lets Steed tow him along the coast in them for a few dozen miles, until they find a secluded inlet with signs of human activity where Ed can dry off. It's beautiful. The sun glitters across the sea. The leaves are green and lush, and the sand is sparkling white where it meets the turquoise sea. It's the color of Steed's tentacles, shading into the deep blue of their tips as the ocean floor drops off into deeper water. Ed squeezes his hair out as he wades to shore, stretching his arms and rolling his neck. The sun is hot and bright, filtering through the thick leaves a dozen feet from the water, and it's warm on Ed's skin where his stolen clothes are already drying. He doesn't have shoes, but that's all right. Since the shift, his skin's been stronger somehow, and the rocky seafloor barely bothers him. He kisses Dee deeply up to his waist in the water. He promises a quick return, then watches as Dee sinks back under the gentle waves. He's got more shipwreck coins, but he feels a little weird about using them as normal money. The first building he reaches is the general store, and the kid behind the counter takes his 3 gold coins with eyes the size of dinner plates. He hands him a small pile of bills in exchange. Ed doesn't know much about the currency, but he's pretty sure he's been ripped off. He doesn't particularly care. As long as it's enough to buy a couple of meals, he's happy. He uses his terrible Spanish to ask for a plastic bag, and he seals his new money securely inside before tucking it inside his pants pocket. He'd rather not have to go through this again. The road inland leads him to a small town, and he follows his nose to a stand selling arepas and sweet fried plantains. He buys a few arepas topped with chorizo for himself, devouring them standing up, then returns for plantains and cheese arepas to bring to Steed. The guy behind the stand convinces him to buy a container of soup, too, promising him it's vegetarian. And Ed juggles the bag and Tupperware in the giant sweet iced coffee he'd bought before anything else. Ed can feel Steed's contentment simmering through their bond, the tug of it under his skin a comfortable anchor pulling them back together. He follows it back to where Steed is waiting in the shallows, mostly submerged, watching the clouds drift across the sky with lazy, half-lidded eyes. He's flicking his tentacles in the water, swirling them mightily, and he's so fucking cute like this. Ed pulls off the clothes and leaves them on the beach, then wades in, bending down to kiss Steed's cheek, holding his purchases above the water. "Brought you something," he says, settling on a tree limb that's half underwater. "Come on." Steed rises from the water, pulling himself onto the log beside Ed, and nuzzles into his shoulder. "Hi,"
he says. I missed you. I was gone for like an hour, Ed replies, but he presses back, winding his bare foot in Steed's tentacles and burying his face in Steed's hair. Steed kisses his neck lightly, then laps at it, and Ed can feel the smile spreading against his skin. You taste good.
I'm sweaty, says Ed.
I like it. Ed pulls back, laughing.
Hang on,
he says aloud.
Hold on, fuck, I got you. I brought lunch.
Steed's answering grumble is half fond, half curious.
Oh, yes?
Yeah, arepas with cheese, plantains, potato and cheese soup. All for me? Steed has abandoned trying to seduce Ed already, poking at the containers. Ed laughs and hands him a plantain. He can taste the burst of sweetness across Steed's tongue, his pleasure in the sensation, and it's this fucking simple stuff that nearly kills him. The quiet, lovely moments, the tenderness between them, Steed's voice in his head and Steed's shoulder pressed to his. He picks up a piece of plantain and feeds it to Steed, shivering at the feeling of Steed's long tongue wrapping around his thumb, tugging it into his mouth. Ed lets him suck it in. Lets him lick the oil from his fingers as he fumbles to set the rest of the food on the part of the log that's above water. They've eaten enough, he decides, and replaces his thumb with his lips, kissing Steed deeply, sweetly. The food will keep. The tunnel takes longer this time, and they don't mind. A few hours of dark closeness punctuated with the glorious crystal cave isn't a chore. And when they pop out into the warmer, clearer water of the Caribbean, it feels like they're already home. It only takes 2 more days to make it back to the island, to the house on the shore. It feels strange to be back. His connections to Mary and Lucius and everyone from the Cascade are fainter, stretched thin, but still present, still strong. He tugs them, feels the return tug from each, one by one. Feels the echoes of that pull ripple across the world to everyone they've touched in turn. It feels right, somehow. Feels like the way it should be. Not just a two-way road between himself and Steed, but a network, a roadmap, an atlas of connections binding them together, reinforcing their connection and balancing their bond. He can even feel his human connections, faint and unpracticed, but there. That night he holds Steed close, the water lapping against the floating bed where they've dragged it out to the pier behind the house. The stars are bright and scattered across the sky, a swirling kaleidoscope of lights that twinkle and slip slowly across the dome of night above them. They move together gently, rocking with the waves, starlight trickling over their bodies. The pleasure builds between them slowly, waves crashing on a beach, pulling the tide up the shore. Ed can feel the connection he has to the Scylla, to the ocean, to the planet. He lets Steed tug him down under the warm, sparkling waves as he shudders and falls apart in Steed's hold. Steed rises to meet him in a bloom of black ink. It's not like the frantic couplings of their journey, of the Cascade, but he sinks into Steed's mind, and Steed sinks into his. And they're more together than they ever were apart. The end.